Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Rack and Yak.
It's time for What Mark Heard on Saturday Suckage with Mark Grody and Steve Rosenblum.
Boy, everyone is stupid except me.
Thank God for us.
Yeah.
Steve Rosenblum, Mark Grody, our near award-winning segment, What Mark Heard, here on The Score. Thank you for joining us. We will be taking you up till 1 o'clock, and we will bring you the Army-Navy game later on today. We will bring you Bulls basketball, Bulls against the Heat. Chuck's pregame show will be at 6:45. For now, what Mark heard is what, Mark?
I heard Olin Krutz yesterday on the Parkins and Spiegel show doing his afternoon show hit. And I'm going to give him credit, even though he doesn't like giving me credit for anything. Olin Krutz was asked the question, a question that a lot of us have asked lately, and that is the question of, does it get to a point where veteran players start to make business decisions and don't care so much about what is happening on the field? And Olin had a different twist on the answer to this question that we're all asking.
Many times, and we talked about this last week. You guys asked me about Allen Robinson and Keen Hicks, and I said no. I said I thought they'd come back. They'd come back if they could, and you want to get out there. Football players always want to play football, especially in a game like the Green Bay Packers. And, you know, Allen Robinson, if you're talking about film, he hasn't put very much good film out there this year. And Akeem Hicks himself, with his age and his injuries, if he's looking to continue playing, he has to prove to the league that he can still go. So I was thinking that they'd get out there. And more than that, I just think they're two guys who, since they've been here, have been pros. They've been pros, and they've shown up, and they've played hard every time, every chance that they've got. So I didn't think that that's what they were doing. I thought that they were probably injured. But to your point, I have seen it a few times. I'm not going to mention any names, obviously, of former teammates. But you do see it sometimes once you're out of it. And you know where you see it mostly, guys? I'll be honest with you. A lot of times you see it in the coaching staff, right? A lot of times you see it in the coaching staff. These guys know they're about to get fired. You see it in your game plan. You see it in the preparation. You see it in play calling. You see it in the strength staff. The strength staff is not putting in the effort anymore. You walk in there, you ask them what workout you should do, and they're like, they really don't care because I'm not going to be here. So, if you are George McCaskey, if you are Ted Phillips, if you are Ryan Pace, if you are one of the leaders up there in that building, those are one of the things you better be checking on every week. So as much as we're talking about players checking out, more than anything, what I've seen is coaches and strength staff and trainers checking out because they know they're not going to be there next year, right? They know they're gone. The players, some of them are going to be there. So they're working hard. They're trying to represent the organization. Sometimes you see it in the game plan a little more. So the leaders up there at Halasol better be checking on that more than anything else.
How about that?
Wow.
That blew me away. That means that Olin Krutz has experienced that in his long Bears career. I had never thought about it from that angle, that the coaches are phoning it in. And he's not saying that this staff is, but he is saying that that has happened, and it could be happening.
Well, if players are looking like Allen Robinson and Akeem Hicks, guys who have been injured are coming back to put stuff on their sizzle reel for a free agency.
Sure, I like that sizzle reel. Yeah.
Would you have reason to worry about Matt Nagy's motivation for starting Justin Fields?
As in
a guy with three cracked ribs.
Oh, like he just doesn't care. He's just like, yeah.
He's doing his best to make the next job.
I got to be honest. I would say no with Nagy because I don't think Matt Nagy, this was not Matt Nagy's choice. You know what I mean? Even if you want to go back from the beginning. If Matt Nagy had his way, it might still be Andy Dalton starting at this point in the season and still packages for Justin Fields. So I think that this was true. One thing that Matt Nagy is good at is handing over the decisions on health to the doctors and moreover to the player as well. So I don't think so. I mean, I can't rule it out, but if you ask me, I say no.
One of the things about Matt Nagy coaching Justin Fields is I fear for Justin Fields' future. I would prefer to limit Matt Nagy coaching him. And here's why. He's going to learn or develop or fall into bad habits. Not that they can't be broken. But the problem with Matt Nagy is what you saw at the end of the Pittsburgh game and then the start of the next game. There were two different game plans.
Yeah.
It's like it is. Matt Nagy has yet to show he's learned how to learn in the NFL. And he talked about it. He had made comments this week about Justin Fields' return. And he said something to the effect of, you know, we could see the things he was getting used to, things he was getting comfortable with. We could see him grow, see him mature. He sounded like someone who had never watched or coached Justin Fields. When coming out of college, everybody knew what he could do. Matt Nagy not only appeared not to know what he could do, but refused, was like willfully stupid about a game plan that played to Justin Fields' strengths. And only after the Pittsburgh desperation, you would think, well, let's come back with more of that. But it wasn't there. It was only in desperate times. I don't think Matt Nagy learns how to learn. The worst thing he could do is coach Justin Fields because he already looks, it's bad for Justin Fields. And I don't think Matt Nagy understands how bad he looks around the NFL, that you have a guy you can't coach correctly. You're talking like someone who's only recently discovered, wow, this guy can run. Wow, this guy's good on boots. This guy's good on, if we run the ball, we can use play action. I think Matt Nagy, every week he designs a game plan for Justin Fields because of the way it looks. It looks so uneducated, and they're unprepared for the quarterback they're trying to coach and the opponent they're playing against. I think he looks worse as far as the next job is concerned.
And the irony is, before we move on here, is that it is supposedly Matt Nagy who had his fingerprints on this draft choice, that his relationship mm-hmm. with Ryan Day. And so one would suspect that he had scouted him very much so.
One would suspect. And learning the strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah. So, you're right, because there has been steps all along where, like, he had him so much in mothballs during training camp in terms of his headspace, Matt Nagy's headspace. He knew Andy Dalton was going to be the starter, that he just wasn't thinking about the Justin Fields game plans. Let's move on to Akiem Hicks. He was a headliner this week, and it felt like news dumpy because it was Friday. You know, like Friday is our Fridays.
News dumpy.
Yeah, but Akiem Hicks spoke, and Akiem Hicks has not spoken a lot this year, and that has been on purpose because he knows it's probably his last year, and he just doesn't have a lot to say. I think this is the third time maybe that he has spoken with the assembled media going back to training camp. And, you know, the first Hicks that I want you to hear is this it, Akiem? Is this it with the Bears?
I think that's the unfortunate reality. You know, the unfortunate reality of our business sometimes is that no matter what you do, no matter what position you put yourself in, you know, things come. All good things come to an end. I can throw every cliche I want at it, you know. But that is the circumstance that we find ourselves in. I didn't know you guys were going to get to me today like this, okay? So at first it hurt, and then I understood. Ultimately, I respect the decisions that are made. Some of them you will want different things, right, for yourself. But that's just not how the business works.
So you and I were talking a little bit about Akiem Hicks before the show started. Akiem Hicks is one of the best Bears defensive linemen of all time, right?
Well, he's a good one. I don't know. I haven't sat there and ranked them. There are other guys who won Super Bowls and did, you know, stuff in the Hall of Fame, worthier like that.
Bears, though. I mean, Bears-wise?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, I know. I mean, you know, there are plenty of Bears defensive linemen, HOF, but he's up there, man.
He has become a favorite for that kind of attitude, that kind of emotion, or what you just heard. I expected him to say, "I with an echo, right? I feel like I'm the luckiest man on the face of the earth." That's what it sounded like. He was real emotional about it, and that got to me. I appreciated that. I it wasn't like he's a Chicago kid. This is not Dick Butkus, a Chicago kid growing up and playing in the state and then playing for the Bears. This was a guy who landed here and had his greatest seasons here, and you were proud to see it. And he acted that way.
Yeah.
I love him for a lot of that. But and his play was great. There's no question.
No, I mean, he is earnest, and I think it's in this cut that you will hear more of it and what he feels he's done with the Bears. But the question that he was asked as a follow-up is, do you feel like your time in the NFL is winding down, Akeem?
Oh, no. No, it's not time to stop playing. I think what tells me that, right, if I can answer that part of the question, that first three quarters against Pittsburgh, you couldn't find anybody hotter on the field. People were getting hit. People were laying down. I know how to play this game at a high level. No matter what happens, I believe that I can play this game for another 3 to 4 years. And hopefully I end up in a place that will want me to be myself and play the game at a high level like I can.
Is there just too much that you see now that you doubt or don't think it can still be here?
I don't even think I'm ready to answer that question, honestly, because I put it to the back of my mind. It's something that I had to do in order to approach this season appropriately. I had to put it to the back of my mind in training camp, you know? And so I'm going to revisit that in January. But what I can tell you now is I've appreciated this last 6 years playing here in Chicago. I would challenge you to find another person on this team that has bled and fought and lived and died with this team the way that I have. So whatever comes from that, I accept. But as far as right now, just ready to play some more football.
And I agree. Like at every time he has played, he's gifted and talented, but he's also maximum effort. Mm-hmm. Like you don't always get that from guys. Like you watch him play, and he is out there and talking on every play and into every play.
He was central to Khalil Mack being Khalil Mack, all caps. His presence, and in much in the same way that it became a joke that McMichael and Hampton were central in making an All Pro out of
Mike
and a Hall of Famer out of Mike Singletary.
Sure.
Yeah, that was what they did, and he was central in that. I'm not minimizing what Khalil Mack's abilities were, but the way that Akeem Hicks affected the game and affected his own team, not just the opponents, was central to when that defense was Super Bowl caliber.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he had a chance at All-Pro in 2018, Akeem Hicks. He just straight up dominated. He was Pro Bowl, but he was not All-Pro.
Yeah. There's such a popularity thing that goes along with that.
Yeah.
And a grandfathered-in kind of thing.
Roquan Smith.
Yeah. Well, you know? But he's played really well.
Talking about Hicks or Roquan now?
Yeah, when they've been healthy, they played really well. Roquan's been good.
Terrific.
I covered my first year on a football beat was the Rams in 87. Dennis Hara, who was hurt most of the year.
You covered Eric Dickerson, huh?
Yeah. Let coach run 47 gap. That was the year that was how dear Eric Dickerson got traded. They came back from the strike, and his comment was, John Robinson, let coach run 47 gap.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah. And that's how he got traded to Indianapolis.
Yeah.
But Dennis Hara made all pro, and he had no right to. And he goes, yeah, it's just a popularity contest. Is that good? And somebody said, aren't you happy that at least, you know, you're thought of that way by your colleagues or by other players? He goes, yeah, I guess he was from West Virginia, and he spoke kind of wine. And I guess it's better than being thought of like Gastineau, that puke. Talking about Mark Gastineau.
Oh, yeah. Everybody loved Mark Gastineau.
Yeah, that's it.
Good old Mark Gastineau. So I talked to Allen Robinson. I had a little one-on-one time with Allen Robinson, and you know, we talked about the season, and you know, the biggest takeaway I could tell you from talking about the hard stuff for Allen Robinson this year is he just said, he just told me this year, not ideal in terms of targets. Quite the understatement, but he knew what I was getting at, and it has to do with his time with the Bears, perhaps winding down just like Akeem Hicks's is. So we got into all of that, and that'll air on WBBM tomorrow. But then I brought up to, I don't know if you know this or not, but Allen Robinson, very, very enthusiastic NBA fan.
Did not know that.
And I said, hey, man, what do you think the Bulls, what do you think about the Bulls? They're 17-9. What do you think about all that?
It doesn't surprise me at all, to be honest. You know, I think that when you go get a lot of guys, especially in free agency on the basketball side, when you get guys who have winning in their DNA, you know, obviously Lonzo Ball, when he came into the NBA, didn't have as much success on the winning side as some people may have saw, but growing up throughout his lifetime, he was a winner. I mean, he was a winner at UCLA. You put him to the team. You look at DeMar DeRozan, you know, and the things that he's done in his career. You know, he's won a lot of games in Toronto with the Spurs. Then you bring in Alex Caruso. You know, he's contributed to a lot of winning as well and has won titles, you know. So when you put those guys around, you know, a young, exciting group already with Zach LaVine, Williams, you know, and then they grab the center from Orlando. So when you bring those guys together, now you have a great mesh of youth and vets, and now you see what they're capable of.
And I know the Bulls beat Brooklyn, but do you truly think they have a chance at this point, the Bulls, at winning the East, or is that too far ahead?
Honestly, right now I would say, I mean, I think Brooklyn is the favorite, but I think other than that, I think the East is pretty open. You know, when you look at Philly and kind of some of the things that they're going through, Boston, Milwaukee, Miami, and Chicago, I think it's all a pretty even playing field. You know, so I'm definitely excited to see, you know, how Chicago gets better, you know, up until All-Star break, and if they make any splash moves or if any players get bought out that they are able to get, you know, to kind of contribute to their already good roster around All-Star break, I think that'd be exciting to see.
Last thing, best in the West. Who's your top two, I guess, in the Western Conference?
Golden State, for sure, is my number one. And I always got to go with my sleep – with not my sleeper team, but my team, especially because they got their star down, is the Clippers.
Okay.
You know, I think it's been good to see Paul George playing and really contributing and playing at a super high level. So, you know, hopefully him and Kawhi could definitely keep that going. And I think that they for sure can make some plays, you know, and can make some noise in the playoffs.
Did you like my cross sports angle, or would you have liked to have just heard him talk about the Bears?
No, I love that.
Okay.
Check out the big NBA brain on Allen Robinson.
The funny part is you know, he only has so much time, and so I was like, I got to the end of the Bears
love
stuff,
that.
And I said, hey, you happen to have a couple more minutes? And he's starting to walk. Would you have a couple minutes to talk about the NBA? He's like, oh, sure, absolutely.
Oh, yeah,
Let's do it.
Oh, my God.
He would have gone on longer if I hadn't had something else to do, probably.
He sounds so different talking about the NBA.
It's pretty cool.
Than he
it?
Does talking about the Bears.
Right. Yes.
And I thought what he said about the Bears and his season and asked about what he said indicted Matt Nagy. When he said, we've been trying to find our identity throughout the course of the season, trying to figure out what works, trying to figure out how we can create explosives and different things like that. This is year four. Matt Nagy said year four, everything comes together, right? And you're talking about trying to find an identity. And Allen Robinson we've seen how diplomatic he can be. Before we got into the NBA, you talked, not ideal, right?
That's not ideal.
But you read that quote, you read between the lines, you go, wait, you're still trying to find an identity?
Oh. Do you know that once upon a time ago, Allen Robinson was the identity?
You're right.
That was it. He was the, like, every single offensive, wow, look at those numbers.
And yeah.
It wasn't, you know, it was, what the hell happened to Jordan Howard? But look, hey, look, Allen Robinson. What happened to David Mucker? But Allen Robinson.
Yeah. Right.
Then it started to change last year when Darnell Mooney started to come alive. And now you're right. Like, what is the, like, we've asked this question a million times. It started to play out as a running team. You know, when Khalil Herbert was filling in for David Montgomery and some of the games that Montgomery had and using the extra offensive linemen, like, there was success. Now we're back in that gray area again where I don't know what the Bears' identity is on offense.
And what's worse is neither does the coach.
That's
well,
correct.
The interim coach.
They are desperately looking for one. That's for sure.
That's right. Maybe the next coach will bring one next year. All right, we'll take a break when we come back. We have more of our near award-winning segment, What Mark Heard. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Rohde, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. play rock and roll. Doors.
LA Woman.
Yeah.
Just got into town about an hour ago.
Welcome in, welcome back. We are in the midst. It is halftime coming out for the third quarter. We deferred. And we have the third quarter of our near award-winning segment, What Mark Heard. There's Mark Rohde. Mark, what did you heard?
All right, you want to talk a little bit of trash talk, and we could do that. Because, you know, the theme of the Aaron Rodgers, I still own you thing. You know, I was trying to get players and coaches going on it.
Good for you.
To pretty much no avail. I mean, most of them were, you know, that was then and this is now. And we're just trying to get a win and this is about business. It's not bulletin board material. But I asked Jimmy Graham about it and then it just got into this whole Jimmy Graham thing.
You've played, obviously, on both sides of this rivalry. You played with Aaron Rodgers. What did you think about the Soldier Field game at the end when Aaron Rodgers said, I own you? Do you think that's in the heads of at least the defensive players or you? I'd love your reaction to all of
that. Yeah, I mean, I've been a part of my own shit talking my whole career. You know, I just haven't had a camera around or Mike Boone to hear it, and I'm blessed for that. You know, I mean, it's obviously a rivalry. You know, there's a lot of emotions that go on. It doesn't matter what the records are. You know, this is one of the biggest in NFL history. So, you know, there's a lot of emotions, and you know, there's always going to be that chatter. There's just rarely a Mike Boone around when it happens. So, you know, it's a special game for both sides, and you know, to be able to go up to Lambeau on Sunday Night Football. You know, we know what it's about. You know, unfortunately, you know, we were on the other end of it last year, even going up in the Lambeau. And you know, so we need to focus in, and we didn't know the environment we're going into. What a great team, and you know, be ready to fight each and every play. And you know, I think they'll be part of it.
You kind of have to appreciate Aaron Rodgers is talking. I mean, just because you've done, as you said.
Yeah, I mean, this is a National Football League.
Yeah.
You know, I've never been mic'd up as a player, and you know, really? Never. And that's for good reason. I don't want anybody hearing this stuff. I gotta say out there for sure. You know, this is, you know, I mean, I think, you know, this isn't golf. You know, we're out there, and each and every play, your deal is to beat the man across from you 1-on-1. And you know, it's a game of whooping the other man across from you. Simple as that. So you know, I don't know any type of, hey man, you know. There's not a lot of niceties, even when you know people. You know, I mean, I played against a lot of my friends, obviously. You know, I'm about to play against a lot of my friends this weekend. But, you know, when it comes game time, man, it's a different beast out there. You know, I think people forget that. You know, we all hit each other, and we all have car accidents every Sunday. You know, so you know, I mean, it's a part of the game. It's a part of the game that I love. You know, I'm going to have to figure out how to talk to people after I get out of here. And, you know, because you can't be talking to people like that in real life. So, you know, I'm going to enjoy it, each and every snap I get for the rest of my career.
Jimmy, isn't that to a different level, though, man? I mean, that's not just, hey, I've earned you on this play. That's, I've owned you my whole life.
Yeah.
The entire organization.
Yeah, I mean, I've said that to almost every organization I've scored on. So, I mean, that's real. You know, I mean, you know, I don't know what people think is being said out there. You know, there's a lot worse I've said. So, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we just got to stop them. And you know, we got to get out here ready on Sunday, ready to play, ready to win. Simple as that.
Have you ever said that to a fan, though?
I've said it to everybody, yes. Yeah.
Inside trash talking with Jimmy Graham.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, in other words, what he's saying is, hey, man, anything goes.
Even on the radio.
Even on
oops.
The radio.
We had an oops.
Hopefully that was just for
we apologize for that.
Yeah.
Hopefully you weren't with your kids.
Hopefully that was just on the internet. Assuming we were able to bounce that off. But, yes, we do apologize for that.
So it does happen, and you won't believe it. And if you were to mic up and truly hear Michael Jordan and Larry Bird and
yeah.
Pick a sport, any sport.
Yeah.
And it was supposedly, you know, so such a revelation when Slapshot came out in the 70s. And some of the players were in the movie were aghast at what Reg said in the corner to a woman who would go on to play the mom in A Christmas Story.
Lovely.
About her and to her ex. So, yeah, it goes on all the time.
Yeah. Even in my talk with Allen Robinson, I was talking to him about trash talking. And Allen Robinson, Mr. Calm, laid back, well-mannered off the field, he said, oh, yeah, he gets into it.
Yeah.
And he said, so does Jimmy Graham, so does Akeem Hicks, and so does Tease Tabor.
Tease Tabor.
Tease Tabor, big trash talker on the Bears. Let's say I got two cuts left. Tevin Jenkins is kind of long, but we got time for it probably, right?
I don't know. We got to get to the Army-Navy game, so yeah, we got a break before then. Got a break after that.
Do we need to take a break right now? What's up?
No, we're not. We're just...
we're okay?
I think. I guess we probably have to pick one.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to give you I don't know. What do you want, Steve? Stevie choice. It's Fields talking about being an underdog or Tevin Jenkins talking about whether or not he's ready to be a full-time blocker. Who would you rather hear from, Steve? Put the pressure on you.
I would rather hear Tevin Jenkins try to define himself and defend himself never having played a down in the NFL.
I think it's actually the better cut. Let's do it. Tevin Jenkins, ladies and gentlemen.
Do you feel 100%?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. If you were asked to start a game or play an entire game, you'd be good to go clear medically the whole thing.
Yes, but that's entirely up to the coaches, though. It's up to them, and I trust the process of what they're doing and how they're handling the situation.
Do you expect to get more as an offensive lineman against Green Bay?
Personally, I'm still waiting to see how it all unfolds. I'm still, right now, still backing up JP and just being able to learn from him as, you know, he's... Of course, no secret that he's going to be a future Hall of Famer, of course. A great player, even great person.
What exactly played out when you got here for training camp and that I know you're trying to get back and then you eventually had to go to the surgery option?
Yeah, well, there's many different things we did before the surgery route, of course, because that was our last resort. Did a couple things. I'm not trying to give you guys too much detail about everything, but... Ultimately, it was different symptoms than what was going on in college. It was a whole different situation. And what happened is I probably pushed myself out there a little bit faster now because I had that urge to, I want to get back on the field. I don't care if it's just hurt. And maybe I did push a little bit too much and it made it a little bit worse, and then that's what happened.
That was your first NFL game. Were you nervous?
Yeah, of course I was nervous, you know. It's the first game in, like I said earlier, a year and 1 month. And it's like the big stage, you know, that's what it is. When I got out there, I put on the suit, you know, my first field goal snap, you know, I had a little, heart was a little racing a little bit, of course. But, you know, it's just one little hump I had to get over, and I'm, like, just had to get that, acclimated, right? Yeah.
That's correct.
That's a good word, I don't know.
Yeah, so they're acclimated.
Acclimated. Funny word, that acclimated. No,
yeah, it's just like it continues with Tevin Jenkins. I think that the theme has been he's just not ready. I mean, that's what coaches have been telling us. If you read between the lines, that's what Tevin Jenkins was just telling us. If you read between the lines, the thing that worries me is if Jason Peters happens to get injured on the first play of the game, Tevin Jenkins would have to play the entire, like, he is the backup left tackle. That doesn't mean that if he doesn't perform well that he stays in, but he is the backup left tackle for the Chicago Bears.
I think he would be Nick Foles' left tackle.
Yeah, at that point.
That's what I would do at that point.
Oh,
they're a package deal. If it's Tevin Jenkins, yeah, it's Nick Foles.
You go right in there with Rashad Coward, too.
Yeah, there you go. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, Ian Happ. We'll hear from Ian Happ. Steve Rosenblum and Mark Rohde, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Indeed, it was more than a feeling. And Saturday Suckage is going to bring you a interview with Ian Happ. But first, we have to say, Mark Rohde, give us your lengthy radio schedule for tomorrow. Bears, Packers, you.
Yeah, so I will be part of the Score pregame show tomorrow. I will be on around 5:40 tomorrow with my usual sideline report and hit with Olin Krutz and Patrick Manley and Mike Mulligan. Molly, all those guys. I will also be part of the WBBM pregame show at 4:00. I've got a couple interviews that will air in the 4:00 hour on WBBM, including Allen Robinson and Bilal Nichols. Other than that, I'll just be tweeting away about the Chicago Bears during the game.
And we have Pat Manley on today. Patrick Manley Long Snapper Award will be presented tonight. You can YouTube it at Bernie's Book Bank. And we want to thank Patrick for coming on. Thanks, Caesar. Terrific to work with you on your last shift, Caesar Perez. It was really wonderful.
No.
If nobody important listen, and that's really important now, if nobody important listen, we'll be back next week. Uh-huh. Here's Ian Happ. Ian Happ was on with Bernstein and Rahimi, and he is the Cubs player rep and had some quite the things to say. And following that will be the Army-Navy game, the legendary Army-Navy game. Thanks for listening. Thanks for texting. Thanks for not calling. Chicago Sports News. Saturday Suckage, of course.
Yep, thank you for that. Thank you.
Chicago. You can find him on Twitter at @IHAP_1 as he joins us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. So how are you feeling? It sounded like you're playing a little hurt in the latest edition of the Compound Podcast. I know you're less wise now that your sources of wisdom have been removed from your face, but how are you healing up?
I'm getting there. Been a little bit of a slower process than I would have liked, but I'm on the mend. And yeah, I did. I played hurt. Really got through it. It was big for me. Big for the compound.
Yeah, that's not fun to have the wisdom teeth out. Are your cheeks still swollen? Are you still feeling chubby bunny when it comes to trying to talk and eat and stuff like that?
Yeah, the cheeks are okay. But yeah, the jaw's a little sore, a little tough to eat. Haven't really gotten the solid foods yet. We're in another pain meds, so we're going straight ibuprofen now. Not great for the stomach. A lot of things going on in my life, you know.
Well, and the way the episode started, I have to tell you that I am vehemently pro eggnog. And I'm right there with Dakota Mekas. It actually did, and Zach was right that it's exactly what you need right now. And for those who say, oh, it's disgusting. I don't know why, but the Southern Comfort brand, not with the it's Southern Comfort brand, but there's no alcohol in it. But we've done a lot of eggnog taste testing in our house, so that is absolutely a winner and a staple of our Novembers and Decembers.
Wow! I'm an anti-eggnog guy. I'm down on eggnog, but I respect the opinion.
I am also pro-nog, but I will do nog substitutes because I just mostly like the combination of the seasoning and the drink. Like, how do you feel about horchata? You live in Austin; you've got to be familiar with that there.
No, any like milk-based alcoholic drink is a little bit. It just I don't like the mixture.
See, I feel like this is a very polarizing topic. I joke that it is as polarizing as Nickelback earlier, whether or not you were pro eggnog. I don't want to. Should I ask about the Nickelback stance as well in this conversation?
No. We have to stay away from all of these controversial topics. There's enough going on in the baseball world right now.
Well, and I appreciate what you brought to the table, talking about it on your podcast the way you did, as candidly as you did, especially being the player rep. And you gave some details that I think are very much worth repeating here. And tell us about what you said on the podcast, talking about what the owners presented in Dallas to the players' union and what the takeaway was.
Yeah, I think talking candidly about it's important. I think it's important to clarify some of the things. It's just the mixed messages out there. And one of the most disappointing parts about the trip to Dallas, you know, obviously all the players go down there and we sit, and it's a long few days. But one of the most disappointing parts is that the owners didn't make one economic proposal the entire time we were there. You know, morning of Tuesday, we made an economic proposal that looped into a proposal for Monday that was kind of a broader package and putting all of these things together on one piece of paper. And it looped in a lot of the economics, a lot of what we talked about with draft and expanded playoffs and all these things that you've heard about. And we just didn't get anything back. And we didn't get anything that said, okay, here's our proposal in the same realm. Here's how we get to a conclusion and move forward. And without having that, you know, it's anybody who's been through a negotiation, whether it's a car or a house or anything, you don't just keep giving numbers and have the other person say no. You don't just keep moving off your position. That's a horrible way to negotiate. So we're just disappointed that there was no economic proposal brought forth by that side in Dallas. And we would hope that, obviously players are hoping that negotiations continue and that we can keep working on this, but some of the things that were said in the media just were not exactly how it happened.
Well, I laughed out loud when I saw how paternalistically the owners had said, we're not negotiating this. We're not negotiating this. And whether it's these rules changes or this, the number of things that they explicitly claimed that were off the bargaining table. And my response was, you don't get to do that. That's not how this works. You can't unilaterally say that this will not be the subject of negotiations. And I would hope that whoever is actually at the table could push back and just say, you know, like Bruce Meyer or whatever, could just say, yeah, no, we're not stipulating to any of this at the outset. And I would hope that that's actually going on.
Yeah, the difficult part about being in a negotiating room is that as people take things off the table, there's just no negotiation there. And there's core principles and core foundations that are work stoppage issues for both sides. But if every issue is a work stoppage issue, then you can't negotiate. And that's not how it works, as you said. But the big thing for players and the big thing for what we're discussing is a way to make the system more competitive, a way to do away with service time manipulation, to have penalties for manipulating service time so that fans are getting to see the best players in the league as soon as they're ready, so that teams are competing all the way throughout the season. So the teams are trying to win games in August and September instead of a race to the bottom to get a draft pick. So the teams are trading for good players at the deadlines. If teams are going out and competing in free agency to put a competitive team out there and not losing 3, 4, 5 seasons in a row, you should be penalized for being a bad team for that many years in a row and not trying. And you should be rewarded if you're a small market team and you go and you make the playoffs as a wild card and you spend money to do so. You should be rewarded with a draft pick. You should be rewarded for going out and competing and putting a product out there that your fans want to see. And I think that's what the players want, and I think that fans can really understand why the game needs to trend in that direction instead of 10 to 15 teams that are trying not to compete and competing for draft picks.
That's something you brought up that I thought was something to expand on, is the concept of giving teams draft picks when they compete. Do you have an idea of how that would work exactly and come together and MLB says, ye small market team, whichever one you want to determine or what the media size is, you made the playoffs, you get an extra draft pick. Did they give you an example of how that would come about?
Yeah, those were examples presented by our side and ideas that came from our side.
But my fault on that, but thank you.
No. But the ideas would be that if you are a small market team, that would be your incentive to go compete on a yearly basis would be that if you make the playoffs, that you get a comp pick so that those picks that are between the picks that are now reserved for qualifying offer, which makes it so that no teams want to go out and sign a free agent. Like, you know, you saw Dallas Keuchel, you saw Craig Kimbrel, like these guys, they don't sign until after the draft because no team wants to give up a draft pick. Whereas, so the qualifying offer, it was just horrible for free agents and for teams to actually go out and compete. But instead of those picks going to teams that were losing a free agent, give those picks in the comp rounds to small market teams that are competing and going to be in playoff spots, or tie those picks to teams that went out and signed a big free agent, or teams that, you know, increased their number of tickets sold in a given year, that they went out and actually put more butts in the seats. You know, that those are ways that you increase competitiveness, that you make sure that teams are actually competing. And, you know, the a system where if you are at the bottom of the ladder for 2, 3 years, depending on the size of your market, then you can't have a pick in the top 10. You can't have a pick in the top 8 picks because you've been bad for too long. I think that there are ways to say, look, you cannot go out. You can reset your roster. That's fine. There's a year that you need to wait 1 year to get some guys back to go and compete again. Fine. But you can't do it for 3, 4, 5 years. It's not fair to your fan base.
See, I don't want to get too in the weeds here, but the problem that I have in general with draft pick based compensation is that it's a bit of sort of a, like a false front on here. And I thought Zach Short did a pretty good job of starting to articulate this. This is not an NBA draft. It's not an NFL draft. What it's ultimately going to do is, unless there is a drastic recalculation of service time and arbitration clock, all more draft picks and higher draft picks is going to do is give owners more pre-arb labor, more inexpensive, exploitable labor. So to me, any reformation of draft pick structure has to be hand in hand with those picks being allowed a bite at the real apple sooner upon material major league performance.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I think that's why one of the reasons this negotiation is so tough is because a lot of changes in the system come in packages where if you're going to do one thing, then you must do others. And so, that's the way to compensate guys early. If it is either moving up the arbitration clock or having a pool of money that is dedicated to those 0-3 guys or 0-2 guys, where those guys are getting compensated for, you know, the Cody Bellinger or Acuna or Juan Soto, that when they're young and they're performing at such a high level, when they're getting accolades, you're getting MVP votes, you're all MLB team, all-star games, like you should be compensated for those. It's never going to get to the fair market value of the compensation. You're not going to be seeing those guys make $20 million, $30 million when they first get into the league, but they should be getting compensated in some way over league minimum for their contributions to their teams. And that's another way to get those guys paid early on. But I think you're right. But the interesting about the draft pick compensation, but the interesting part is teams are valuing draft picks so highly. So until teams stop valuing draft picks in that way and prospects in that way, you saw last year, Darvish is traded for a bunch of prospects, or you have other guys throughout the league who have been traded when the Marlins moved all those outfielders. You know, you get traded for all of these prospects. Teams are valuing prospects, they're valuing draft picks, they're valuing young talent. So we're trying to play in their court.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.